Welcome to the show. This is Mark Becker here on The Rational Revolution. And I have with me, finally, oh my goodness, is the busiest man in Wisconsin politics, Wisconsin Democratic Chairman, Mr. Ben Wickler is here. What's going on, dude?
What a moment in Wisconsin and American
politics. Oh my gosh.
Holy smokes.
You know, it's what we talked last, and it was a completely different race. You know, the path to victory was so, you know, it was perilous. It was very, you know, we didn't know what was going on. Now we have a new nominee. We have a new nominee for vice president. My, how quickly things change. Have you ever seen anything like this, Ben?
I've never seen anything like this. I don't know if anyone's ever seen something like this. You know, when everyone was thinking about what would happen if President Biden made the incredibly hard decision to not pursue reelection, no one really predicted that everyone would coalesce in the Democratic Party and independents would move en masse, and that the national mood would change, that a vice presidential candidate who most Americans had never heard of would come along and just light the country on fire, that we'd have a ticket that could pack, you know, 11,000 people into a field in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and then head to Detroit and get 15,000 people there. It is like, it's like someone turned on the lights and suddenly everything is visible and everyone's excited and it's like a surprise party. That's how it feels.
It does. It feels like, you know, there's such excitement for the future and there's such, you know, it's really palpable. You were recording this on Thursday. You were with them yesterday. How were they?
They were beaming. you know, cool. Behind the scenes and in front of the scenes. They were just so excited. They were laughing. They were like fired up, and they're also very realistic and focused on the fact that this is not a slam dunk. This is a basically a toss up election at this point, and it's going to take work. But they and frankly everyone in the crowd and all the people I interacted with are ready to joyfully do that work. You know, here in Wisconsin and in Minnesota and throughout Vice President Harris's life, this is a group of people who believe in hard work and actually do that work, and you shoulder that burden joyfully because it's a way of serving your community and your family and building community at the same time as you're winning an election. And so it feels like, you know, everyone is ready to roll up their sleeves. And that's exactly the kind of energy and focus we need to win this election.
It was fascinating to see because I watched, you know, I wanted to see the live stream of Harris's event. And I didn't know what time it was. And I turned on and my local news station had the J.D. Vance thing and his, you know, the first thing he said was, oh, well, you know, unlike the Democrat, because then, of course, it's a Democrat party, you know, it's a little jab, as they always do. The Democrat party, they never answer any questions, blah, blah, blah. What a contrast between the negativity and the petty games that they were playing at J.D. Vance's interview and his whole thing to the bright, upbeat, you know, for the people feel that and message that Harris and Walz had yesterday. That was so cool to see.
J.D. Vance was asked, what makes you happy? And he said, well, all kinds of things make me happy, but right now I'm angry. That's like, yeah. do you want a national mood of anger? Is that like what you think this country needs and is hungry for right now? Or do you think we can, you know, celebrate what brings us joy? And that kind of is the core contrast. Trump seems to be brooding, obsessed with people who wronged him and trying to seek revenge. And Harris and Walz are out here celebrating what they love about America.
Yes.
And, you know, wanting to build more of it, wanting to give everyone the kinds of opportunities that everyone should be able to have. Like, that is, I think that joy beats morose, brooding revenge fantasy when it comes to how do you win a majority of the public.
Every day of the week. And, you know, and it was neat to see. We had some great news come out of the Marquette poll yesterday. I think last time they had a poll, Biden was down multiple points. Now it's a dead heat with Kamala up a point in Wisconsin. Wonderful, amazing Tammy Baldwin. She was here on the show in studio a couple weeks ago, and a poll came out that put her 5 points ahead of perennial candidate and California resident Eric Hovde. So that was awesome to see. And we talked about with Tammy here because this was at the time where Biden was at the top of the ticket still, and I wondered, you know, a lot of times the top of the ticket is the tide that lifts all boats. But she said that she believes that there is going to be a bubbling up from the bottom because of the new maps and the new districts and everything. And now I think with the new top of the ticket, there's really Wisconsin's primed to do some big stuff for Democrats here in November.
It really is. The thing I keep thinking about is like surround sound. People are going to hear directly from candidates for state legislature in Green Bay, in the state Senate and assembly races, all over Northeast Wisconsin, all over the state. They're going to hear from congressional candidates, people like Kristen Lierley and Peter Barca and our eventual nominee in the 3rd Congressional District, all over. They're going to hear from Tammy Baldwin in her campaign, and they're going to hear and see Vice President Harris and future Vice President Walz. And all of them are carrying the same kind of message and the same kind of spirit and energy. This is about freedom. It's about opportunity. It's about moving forward instead of backward. And the Republicans' message and what they're promising to do to the country is Project 2025, abortion bans and cuts to Social Security and stuff that people just don't want. And when you hear from everyone, people who are credible messengers on the topics that they're talking about, it makes it clear what the choice really is. And this is a choice I think Wisconsin's ready to make. I think this is what people want. They want to expand freedom, and they want to expand opportunity, and they don't want to go back.
We're talking with Ben Wickler, chairman of the Wisconsin Democratic Party. What are you doing here in these months? I'm imagining you're waking up and like, oh God, what day is it? What time is it? You know, and it's like 5 in the afternoon on a Tuesday because you just burned the candle at both ends. What is your schedule like? What are you doing?
I mean, there's a lot of 16-hour days happening at the moment, which, it's part of the deal. Yesterday, left home at about 5:30 and then got back just in time to do a round of TV interviews before crashing to sleep. And, today, back at it. But it is also, like, I brought my kids to Eau Claire. My wife brought our kids up to Eau Claire, and I was there with my 6-year-old watching, Harrison Walz come out on stage and have these selfies with my 6-year-old kiddo Jack giving big thumbs up.
What an incredible thing!
It was so special, and these are moments that I think all of us of every age are going to remember for the rest of our lives when we were part of something so much bigger than ourselves.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think, like you say, Wisconsin is kind of primed for this. What do you think will happen? I mean, is the legislature in play? If so, is the Senate? How about the Assembly? Where do we look? How is this shaping up?
So here's the game plan. In the state assembly, if we work our living hearts out, we have a chance to flip the majority. That means a 15-seat gain. And we're shooting for 16, 17 seats. It would be a really, really historic feat to do this. But we can do it. It is within the realm of possibility.
Really?
So that, yes. So that is goal number one in the state assembly. And if we do that,
that would be seismic, Ben. That would be seismic.
Seismic. End of Robin Voss.
Yes. Oh my God.
And potential to expand Medicaid and legalize cannabis and do things that just the vast majority of people in our state have been just calling out for. Now in the state Senate, it's staggered 4-year terms. So in the state Senate, we can win 4 seats now. Including Jamie Walz in Northeast Wisconsin.
Yes.
That'll get us from 11, a supermajority, to 15 seats, which is a couple seats shy of a majority. But if we do our work right this year, then we have a very clear shot at winning a majority in 2026. And my goal is that this year we win one chamber, next year we win both chambers of the governor's race, and we have a Democratic trifecta, and we can learn from the Minnesota miracle and the Michigan miracle and have a legislative session where we not only fix a lot of the stuff that Scott Walker and the Republicans broke, but actually take a step forward and live up to our state's motto and, become a state that shows the country what it looks like to be a pro-worker, pro-democracy, pro-climate change, pro-family, pro-young people state that works for everyone and where it's a little easier for everyone to raise a kid. That is a vision that is totally within our power. And our goal is to work every day to make that happen. And at the same time, re-elect Tammy, tip the presidential election, and flip 2, maybe 3 House seats and help shift the majority control of the House of Representatives.
You know, I have to say it was such an honor to have Tammy Baldwin here. And it was the first time I've met her. It was the first time I've spoken with her. And, we talked a little bit off mic about, my background and how, I used to be a Republican and I kind of was like, I feel really bad about that, about the things that I worked for. And she grabbed my hand and she said, you really, it takes a lot of courage to change like that. And just though that those little moments of humanity, in 5 minutes with Tammy Baldwin, I was blown away to see how genuine, how passionate, what a story that she has too. Like, Wisconsin is so well served by that woman. Talk a little bit about Tammy.
Tammy is a fighter for everyone, for regular folks that want to be able to have a family supporting job and put food on the table and afford the medicine their doctor prescribes. And she comes by it honestly. You know, she grew up raised in a large part by her grandparents. Her mom, she's spoken publicly about this, struggled with substance abuse disorders. And she knew what it's like to have things fall apart and to have to pull things back together. She grew up, went to West High School, same place I went. And she was elected to county board when she was in law school and then as a state representative. I got to know her when I was in high school and she was a state rep. And even then, she was someone who could really engage and show her respect to anyone she met, whether they were too young to vote or a senior in a nursing home, which in both fronts really contrasts with Eric Huffney, who seems to look down at those at both groups of people. But with Tammy Baldwin, you know, I remember she would come to debates that my friends and some adults and I organized between state legislators so that high school students could see, you know, how people respectfully debate these issues and then vote on them. And Tammy always won those debates. And then my friends and I all volunteered on her first race for Congress in 1998.
Really?
I've seen, yeah, like, and it was a formative political experience for me. The day after her primary victory, the headline in the local paper was Youthquake, because so many people had gotten energized and voted and organized for her. And then she's done exactly what she promised to do in office, which is to never forget where she came from, never forget the people she's fighting for, show up for dairy farmers and for the people making manhole covers in Nina and, you know, like all across Wisconsin. She really understands the work that people do and how hard things can be. And she's on their side. Even if when the biggest special interests in America go after her, she doesn't back down.
That's awesome.
And that, I think, wins friends, even who might disagree with her on some kind of political level. They just know that she's fighting for them.
That's
that
awesome.
Is what counts in our state.
Ben Wickler, I thank you so much for your time. You are the man. I appreciate the work you're doing, and I appreciate all the time that you gave to us today. Go do some more work, buddy. Thank you so much. We'll see you on the other side.
That was great.
Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, Mark.
Here on the Rational Revolution. Oh, what's going on, everybody? Oh, wow. Thanks to Ben Wickler. You know, when I was trying to get him on the show, I was texting him like a crazy stalker for about a week and a half, 2 weeks straight. And he was supposed to be on the day before we recorded, and he totally rudely canceled because, and I can't even be mad. He was with the vice president and the future vice president. So, you know, I get it. We'll give him a pass. But it was wonderful to hear him, and I appreciate all the work that he's doing. And, but now we're going to switch gears a little bit, and we're going to talk with dear friend and congressional candidate, Dr. Kristen Lierley. What is up? How are you, my dear?
Well, hello, my friend. And I just want you to know, although Ben spent all this time yesterday with the future president and vice president, you too are important. So it is a joy to be here with you.
Oh, yay! Thank you so much. So are you calling us from the great north of Tim Walz country, or are you back in the district?
I am in the district.
Yay.
I'm home in Ledgeview. Yeah,
yes.
We have a big weekend coming up. We're going to be all over the place at the Stockbridge Muncie Powwow.
Nice.
We're going to be
cool.
Algoma at Shanty Days. And then I'm going to be in Kaukauna with a bunch of my friends from high school, just hanging out and having a great time Saturday night. I'm so excited.
Oh, cool. Good for you. I want to talk, you talk about the parades. We talked a little bit about this. We texted back and forth. And, you know, so I live in Pulaski, and we have Polka Days, And it's a huge thing. And I debated whether or not to talk about this publicly. And I just made the decision about 10 seconds ago. I'm going to talk about it.
I think it's important to talk about this, though, because we've been talking about it offline. And
it is.
We have to recognize that in some of our rural counties, there's a lot of fear and division, and things are really bubbling up, and we've got to create a space for people to be able to share their voices in a positive and productive and community building way.
Yeah. So. And so what happens, so there's a huge parade every year, and for the Polka Days parade, and there's just a buttload of tractors, of course, there's polka bands, and there's, you know, every couple, you know, there's political candidates. And this year, there's a lot of political candidates. And even the tractors, a lot of them, God bless them, had like Farmers for Trump and all this kind of wonderful stuff. And they throw out candy, and it was really cool. But this year, and this is why I think it's important to talk about this stuff, because the perspective that people have, I don't think they really understand. I know I didn't. I didn't understand or have a perspective of what it was like to be a person of color in a very white community. And there are different times, like my wife, who is a black woman, we have two children. My son looks just like me. Our daughter looks just like her. And she, like little things from her walking into the grocery store and someone asking her, whose child is that? When it looks like me. Or, you know, like those things. And I didn't experience that. I'm a white guy, right? I never had that perspective until the weekend of Pulaski Polka Days, where my beautiful daughter, and she is so freaking cute, you guys. She was asking for candy. And someone from one of the political floats, this girl was going to give my daughter some candy. And I'm assuming it's a mother. Like shooed her away, kind of grabbed her by the shoulder and said, "We don't give those people candy." And it took me back. I was like, "What just happened?" And then there was, someone who I know who is a family of color, like sitting 20 feet to my left, and did the same thing to them. And which affirmed, like, okay, that's what that was. And I feel horrible. And this is selfish of me, because I didn't stand up for my daughter and for my wife, because I didn't know what was going on. I'm like, no, there's no way that, oh my God, that just happened. And I can't
imagine just to take a minute and acknowledge, obviously that's a terrible thing for your entire family. And for you, I can't imagine how shocking it was. You don't expect it, and you don't know how to react, because you're in a community where you felt comfortable and embraced, and to witness something like that happen to someone that you love so much and want to take care of and protect. I can't even imagine how that felt for you. So I'm so
It
so
hurt
sorry.
A lot, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
But you, and so that was horrible. And I don't necessarily paint that with the community, but I know that those views exist, and it was really shameful. But your volunteers and your team had something happen to them too.
Yeah, a few different things. One of my volunteers, who was a white man wearing a Christian for Congress t-shirt, was squirted by someone yelling "baby killer," which I'm kind of used to, but I just didn't think that they would go so far as to squirt someone who was clearly not me. But he was really offended by that. And frankly, it was upsetting.
Yeah.
And then another volunteer of mine had beer thrown at her during the parade.
Nice.
And then,
what is that, like 9 in the morning, by the way? So that's kind of, it's, you know.
Right. Well, and apparently there were quite a few pretty intoxicated folks there.
Yeah.
And then there were a couple of folks who were on the sidelines, and they were offered candy, and the people who were with them slapped the kids' hands as they were taking candy and said, "We don't take candy from those people."
Oh, wow.
So it's just that level of discomfort and hostility. But I think that is a reflection of what we've seen from this extremist branch of politicians that have made this kind of behavior okay.
Yes.
With the fear and the division and the ugliness. It is the opposite of everything that I have heard from Wisconsinites. And Mark, You used to be the chair of the Brown County Republicans.
Sorry about
that. I grew up voting for Republicans in a Republican family.
Yeah.
The people that we came from were not like this.
No.
And the people that I talked to people of all different stripes and ages and backgrounds. And that is not who the people of Northeastern Wisconsin are. And that is not who the people of Pulaski are. It's just a terrible, ugly representation, but it's big and it's visible and it's intimidating. And what we have to do as a community is not shy away from it. We have to push back in the most loving and supportive way possible.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, it's so sad that, like, you know, who was it that said, I think it was Tim Miller last week that said, we're a 52-48 country. But it's like, I mean, yeah, we are, but we're not like 52-48 extreme versus not. I do believe that's kind of a hallmark of the show, that there is more that connects us than divides us. It's just the people that divide us are so damn loud, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that they're the minority, but they're getting bigger and they're getting louder. And it's and they're loud because, you know, the people at the top from, you know, the Brown County Republican Party, who are suing the city today, that saying that, like, the room that people are going to put absentee ballots, like, there's all to Trump to Ron Johnson, the extreme is getting more extreme and it's more dangerous. And I want to talk a little bit more about that, but I want to talk about your race and what you're seeing. And I want to talk about your schedule. I want to see how the heck you are as well. So, you know, and it's, I'm grateful that you're here on a quick pinch hit, for us to get, get through this, this show, and we'll talk to you a little more at the other side of the break. Stick with us. Faded as my jeans. Bobby thumbed a diesel down just before it rained and rode us all the way into New Orleans. Busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train. Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. Let this song go a little bit. We're talking with a dear friend and a congressional candidate, Dr. Kristen Lyerly. This song is actually a tip of the cap to another Kristen, Chris Alfheim, who is running for state senate, who was the previous host. So we always play this song at least once during the show to remember our roots. And we love her so much, and we wish her all the best as well. So we were talking on the other side about, you know, divisiveness and all of that. And I want to talk to you because I think you have such a unique perspective on this is, you know, okay, there's a movement, and we talked to Ben Wickler previously in the show, and there is a movement coming. And on the day after the election, what is that, November 7th or whatever the day is, what happens then? How do we, you know, move forward? How do we heal? You know,
I think for me, I think we take stock of where we're at and then we start charting that path. And for me, this campaign is not just about this congressional seat and just that short-term gain. This is all part of this much longer game that ties into what we were just talking about. It's the community building. It's the bringing people together. It's the problem solving. When you look at what some of these extremist GOP folks in particular are doing right now in this country, it's all about culture wars and identifying these little things that pick us apart and make us feel uncomfortable and fearful. Well, what I want to talk about is childcare.
Yeah.
And making sure people can access it and afford it. How about healthcare in general? I mean, certainly reproductive healthcare, because I'm an OBGYN doctor, so that is my bread and butter and what I talk to people about every day. But if you live in a place like Oconto or Medford or Shawano, do you have an opportunity to get to a physician on a regular basis. In rural areas, we're aging, and our aging populations don't have the same accessibility. They can't get to the doctor, but they need more contact with the doctor. They need more prescription drugs. Prescription drugs are too expensive. We have to lower the cost of prescription drugs, and we're making some headway there, but there's so much more work that needs to be done. So if our leaders were actually focused on solving these problems that affect our lives every single day, we would get somewhere.
Yeah.
But instead, they're distracted by these spicy things. You know, the first thing they want to shout out is the border. Yes, we've got issues at the border, and we need to work together in a bipartisan fashion to solve these problems, to create a pathway to citizenship, to secure the border, to stop the flow of illegal drugs across the border. All of those things need to happen. But they failed to compromise on a solid deal that would have started that process or strengthened that process.
Well, and I think
so. They don't want to come together.
And like with the border and so many other things, like truth doesn't matter, because the truth is they did come together to put together the strongest bipartisan border deal in the history of our country. Tom freaking Cotton was in on this and was okay with this and endorsed this, that President Joe Biden was going to sign, until Donald Trump called his people in Congress and said, don't do it because I want to run on it. They don't give a crap about actually solving things, because it's easier. And that's why it was so frustrating to watch stupid J.D. Vance yesterday talk about, oh, well, you know, this border and, you know, Harris is the border czar and she failed and she failed. It's like, no, the only reason you're saying this is because your boss called people in Congress and told them to vote no.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
And it's such a shiny thing that it's just so easy to say the border, and it's a triggering word.
Right.
And I think that is one thing that the Trump camp has been so effective at, is distracting people from what really is happening. And, you know, something that you mentioned earlier about in the Pulaski Polka Days parade, how there were tractors and there were farmers for Trump, made me think about my grandfather was a dairy farmer. His son still owns that farm. There are no cows anymore, but, you know, they still have the fields. My uncle, like, I've got a deep dairy farming history, so I really care about what's happening with our farming community. And that is such an important part of our economy here in Wisconsin. Well, if you look at Project 2025, they dismantle so many of the programs that support farmers.
Yep.
Crop insurance goes away.
Yeah, right.
And I don't know how farmers survive without crop insurance.
Right.
I mean, you can't, they're barely making, most farmers are barely making ends meet the way it is. You don't have crop insurance, one bad year and you're bankrupt.
Oh my God. There's a farm.
That's one piece.
Yes. There's a farm that's by us on my drive to work every day. I live out in Sabisky and I drive into my dealership in Suamico. And there was a farm that had like three different fields, one on the right side of the road, one on the left side of the road. The right side of the road was growing. It was fine. The left side of the road was not, because of something. I don't know what it was, but they had to completely till up the entire field and replant everything. You know, and so, and like, I'm looking at this as the season's going on, I cannot believe how much that would have cost. And yeah, they talk about that Project 2025. The facts, like, people don't know that. They don't know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, we've got to stop voting for R's and D's and start actually having conversations about the things that matter to us, because that, it's that common ground. It's those issues that affect our communities all the way down to school boards and what's happening in our neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And I think with COVID, we were isolated and divided, but now we're starting to come back together and we're starting to recognize that we need that human contact. And frankly, Mark, I'm feeling hopeful.
Yeah.
I think that this is the time, this is a transformational time in our country's history. And here we are, with the ability to help create that future that we need to see, that we want to see for our future, for our kids.
I truly believe, I said this, oh gosh, I don't know what episode it was, but when, like, I was watching Joe Biden's speech where he was talking about why he was stepping down and not running for reelection. I truly believe, and I said at the time that that speech, it was like his farewell address almost. But I think that selflessness, that level of selflessness, country over self, will be talked about in history books for a really, really long time. And some of the stuff, the things that he said, you know, that was a huge point in our history. I don't think that can be underscored, you know, because that paved the way for new leadership, and it paved the way for, you know, light over darkness, love over hatred. And because that's what this is about, right? And one of the things I want to talk about too is, you know, now that the race has changed and we had new polling come out, holy crap. Like, you want to talk about seismic stuff. That's a seismic shift in where it was with Joe Biden, likely voters down like 5-7 points in the Marquette poll. Mm-hmm. And now Kamala Harris is up by a point. And
mm-hmm. I think it's a reflection of exactly what we're talking
yes.
about. People have been so thirsty for that sense of hope, for the idea that they're not stuck in this fearful, divided world.
Well, and I think that the conversation changes to your race too, because, like, you know, it was, okay, boy, this is an uphill battle, and it's a, you know, it's still, it's a red seat, but now it's like, holy crap, like, you could do this. Like, there's you this is freaking winnable. Like,
it is winnable.
Seriously. And no, like big. That, I mean,
yeah. But the only reason that this is a red seat is because of the way that it was carved
correct.
Up with the terrible gerrymandering.
Yes.
I mean, the city of Green Bay was divided up into 3 different Senate districts. That doesn't make any sense.
Mm-mm.
So now that Green Bay is one Senate district, Jamie Wall is going to win that district, and Chris Alpheim is going to win her district in Appleton.
I love them
and
both.
They're going to do it because, yes, because they're having conversations with people, and they are bringing the issues forward that people want to talk about, that they want their leaders to address. And that's something that we're doing in our congressional campaign too. I live in Green Bay, so, you know, it's easy for me to be out and about here. But for example, on Monday, we're going to be in Algoma. We're doing a town
yes.
hall in Algoma. If you live in the area, if you're in Kewaunee County, come on. I would love to hear what you have to say. I don't care if you vote for Republicans or Democrats. If you are somebody who wants to see a brighter future, come on out to our town hall. On Tuesday, we're doing a big primary night event at Titletown in Green Bay. And that is going to be a blast. Pat McCurdy is going to be there. If you don't know Pat McCurdy, he is like,
I totally want to go to that, by the way.
Yeah, come on. It's going to be so much fun. Former Lieutenant Governor Barbara Lawton is going to be there.
Oh, nice.
We might even get a little visit from Tammy Baldwin, maybe.
Shut up, really?
To be determined. Yeah, it's going to
be
so much fun.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
So that's Titletown on Tuesday. And then on Wednesday, we're doing a fundraiser up in Howard Suamico area. We are getting out to every corner of the district. We were in Shawano last week. We're going to be up on the Stockbridge Muncie Reservation over the weekend. We're getting out to talk with as many people as we can, because people are feeling that desire to be heard. They want to come forward. They want things to change. And that's exactly what we've seen reflected in the Harris-Waltz ticket in the very short time that it's been out. The change in the polling, the enthusiasm reflected by the fundraising, people love the direction that this country is headed.
Yeah, and I look at some of, like, you know, the ads that are coming out on either side, and there's such a stark difference. You know, you have like... like the Andre the Giant, a big guy that takes on big fights, you know?
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, it's this dark, I'm your tough guy, versus like, hey, I want to work for you, and mm-hmm. I want your family to be safe and loved and secure, you know?
Yes.
And it's, I hope people are getting sick of the own the libs type thing, and more, you know, paying more close attention to, you know, like, why don't we have things like legalized cannabis in Wisconsin when every other state has it? Why don't mm-hmm. we have access to affordable childcare? And why are women's bodies a political punching bag? Like,
yeah.
those things aren't okay.
We haven't even expanded postpartum Medicaid in this state. We are one of three states that takes medical access away from women in the postpartum period at 6 weeks.
That's wild.
Postpartum. Yeah. And that means that almost half of all women at that point in their pregnancy, and when the baby comes out, the pregnancy isn't over. You know, the postpartum period really does last for about a year.
Oh, yeah.
And that is actually most people, if somebody is going to have a serious complication or die related to their pregnancy, it's going to happen in the postpartum period.
Oh,
so
really?
If you really care about moms and babies and families, you will be on board with making sure that they have access to healthcare in the postpartum period. But here in Wisconsin, we have not been able to achieve that because clearly our legislators, including Andre Jacques specifically, they have implemented and they've made all of these attempts to restrict moms and women from having fundamental health care that truly helps people grow their families in a desired way, helps them control the trajectory of their lives, and also builds our economy.
Yeah.
So somebody like Andre Jacques, who legislates out of his own idealism, like you should have beliefs. That is important, but you don't get to impose your beliefs on other people. And when you're a legislator, your job is not to force people to live the way that you live. It's to hear the people and to try to make the best decisions for the people that you serve and represent.
Well, and it's like, you know, you act like you're this big tough guy, but it's like, you know, you weren't so tough when you were on a ventilator because you didn't listen to healthcare professionals during a pandemic. You wanted to own the libs and it almost cost you your life. Like when does...
And left his family abandoned with a breadwinner.
Right. When do facts matter? So I want to thank you for the quick pinch hit here to hang out with us here today for a while. I do want to tell people, if you're in Green Bay area, come on out and say hi. Tuesday, the primary night over at Titletown. That will be fun. I think I want to go. I'm going to take my wife and kids, and I think we should go hang out and say hi to you. I think that would be great.
I would love that so much.
Yeah.
And Mark, it's always such a blessing to hang out.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kristen Lierley, candidate for Congress. Y'all should vote for her and donate to her campaign and get her across this finish line. Thank you so much for being here.
Always a pleasure, Mark.
We'll be back. Rational Revolution, Mark Becker, your host. You can catch all these episodes on the Civic Media app, on our website. They're all available via podcast. Check them out. That would be wonderful if you did. And my thanks to Chairman Ben Wickler and dear friend Dr. Kristen Lierley for joining us today. What a packed show. Oh my goodness. That was cool. It was an honor to talk to them both. You know, I also want to thank, you know, everybody here in the production area of Civic Media. You don't hear their voices, but they are, you know, they are why we're able to do this. We've had some really impressive guests on this show, from Ben Wickler to Tammy Baldwin, Kristen Lierley, Tim Miller. Next week, we're going to have Mandela Barnes, former Lieutenant Governor. He's going to join us. And literally none of this would be possible without the production people just being able to work around their schedule, because it's kind of crazy. So thank you, everybody that has been involved here at Civic Media, because this is cool. It really is neat. And I hope that you have a little bit of a peek behind the veil, if you will, of what campaigns are like and what, you know, what the country, what the state, what our communities are going through. Because I really believe this is a time of some deep, deep change. And in that deep change, there's hard choices. And I want to talk about some hard choices, not the Hillary Clinton book. I'm sure it's very good. But difficult choices that you have to make that will keep you up at night, and choices that you will remember how they made you feel for years to come. This week, I had to make a very hard choice. I run a business, and I had to make a hard choice with a member of my staff. And it was one of the most difficult choices that I've ever had to make in my entire career. And it was, I'm still just torn about it. And I know it was the right choice to make for the business and for everybody else involved in it. But, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, man, it doesn't feel good. Because you know, that impacts a person and their family and all of that stuff. And it's just, it sucks. It's really, really hard. And so I kind of look at, you know, making hard choices, and I bring it back to what's going on in politics, because that's what we do here on the show. And, you know, in the world that I am in, I talk a lot with people that are in the middle, talk a lot with people who are Republicans and all of that. And they talk about how this choice of Kamala Harris or Donald Trump is such a hard choice. I don't like Kamala, blah, 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 you know, and I get a kick out of that. Cause like, you know, this week really put that into perspective so clearly for me. You know, if you want to know what a hard choice is, make a decision like that. That choice, my friend, is a hard one. You know, what we have here in November is not even close. I have a favorite movie. It's the movie's called 13 Days. And of course, it's a super nerd movie, but Kevin Costner's in it, so it's not like that super nerdy. The 13 Days is about the Cuban Missile Crisis and how the Kennedy administration, you know, navigated through it. It's a fascinating, fascinating movie. And I totally recommend you watch it because it is really good. But there's a quote in that movie when the CIA director is trying to convince Bobby Kennedy to recommend airstrikes to the president and airstrikes on Cuba where the missile silos are. And the quote goes something like, "Bobby, sometimes there is only one right choice and you thank God when it's so clear." And that's this. That is this. And you know, of course, my opinion is completely 100% unbiased. but I truly believe that what we have, and I said it a little bit to Kristen Lierley, I think in November, this is a battle of light versus darkness, of good versus evil, right versus wrong. That's what this is. You know, I had someone come up to me. We had our kids' flag football meeting, and a friend of ours who coached him in baseball. So shout out to him if he's listening. But he came up to me and he said, "Hey, man, I've been listening to your show. I really enjoy it. It's a different perspective. And it's something that I appreciate very much." I love that. I love that. Because those people are the people we need to reach. And so often people say, "Oh, I don't want to talk politics. I don't want to get into it. I just let other opinions be." No, 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 no. Those are the people that we need to reach. And when we talk to Kristen Lierley about how do we heal, the day after the election, what do we do? You know, and it's those conversations that we have now. Those are the conversations that we need to have. And when someone says, "Oh, well, how is it good versus evil?" You know, they should know that those are the people that need to hear that, like, my wife has experienced more racism in her life since Donald Trump's rise than she's ever experienced before. Like, those are real conversations that we need to have. People need to hear stories about how striking down Roe v. Wade has put millions of women's lives in jeopardy. They have to hear that. And people need to hear the perspective of their friends and neighbors who care about the future. It's not about owning the libs. And I'm writing an op-ed, and it'll be published, I think, in the Journal Sentinel and a couple other places. But it's a one that officially endorses Kamala Harris. And in that op-ed, I'm asking Republicans and level-headed conservatives, because they do exist. They do exist. And that's something that's important of our left-leaning friends, is to understand that they do exist. I want them to embrace that feeling they get when Trump says something or does something they used to think was unfathomable, and lean into that and vote the right way. You know, I say this sometimes, I'm ashamed a little bit of some of the things I've done in my past in the political life that have made it more difficult for people to live free and safe. But I'm grateful for the right and the opportunity to change. And I'm grateful for the opportunity to fight for other people's rights. And I'm so grateful for people like you who listen to the show. And I hope that you get out of this the courage to speak that truth as well. Because it is because of you that the future of this country and the future of our children are beautiful and bright. And I do believe that we are headed towards a really, really wonderful future. And it's because of you. So don't be afraid to have those conversations. We'll see you next week on The Rational Revolution. I'm Mark Becker. But when you talk about destruction, don't you know that you can count me out?